Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 34 of Season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Richard Kirkham of Kirkham Movie A Day and the Shepherd of the Lamb cast. Welcome back, Richard.
Hey, why does this keep happening to us?
Roger, we're on it.
Glad to be here, Rob.
And I'm glad to have you here. That's I've been enjoying myself all week. Hopefully you have too.
Yes.
So minute 34 begins with a panicked pilot calling for assistance and ends with Trudeau briefing the staff. So basically, you know, we ended things yesterday with the lights going out on the runway. We won't go back and have the same conversation we did yesterday about, the order of how the lights should have gone out and the reactions and stuff like that. But we'll just take it at face value that happened. You know, and that's it. We don't need to go beyond that.
Yeah, this minute is basically all about tech jargon being exchanged by people in the tower. And, explaining the operations that's going on with the planes that are in the air and the actions of what they're getting ready to do when they're landing. And so it involves a lot of technology and jargon to get us
through the whole
process.
That's right. There's a lot of jargon here, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, progress peaked with the frozen pizza. So all this technology is beyond me.
Hey, that's pretty good. Pretty good you remember that line. And that's a line from a long time ago. That was the first week or even the second week. So it was pretty good. I'm very impressed, Richard. Thank you.
There you go.
That's right. So, yeah, we hear a panicked pilot over the radio say, Dulles, what's going on? I'm on approach. Maintain position. Repeat. What's going on down there? Roger, we're on it. We're unable right now. Delay, Fuji, 604, execute, publish, missed approach procedure and hold. TWA 23, unable to clear you for approach at this time. Climb to and maintain 10,000. So, I mean, again, I like the way that they're showing us how grave the situation is.
Well, it's easy for a layperson to get overwhelmed by all the techno talk and jargon. So by putting it all in here, we get a sense of the panic that's going on.
Correct. And besides getting the tech talk, they also show us all of the different, radar systems and stuff like that, which we're not supposed to understand what's going on anyway. But we just hear, and the camera goes from, position to position, showing us all the different things. It's to give us the idea that, okay, something big is going on here. We got to figure this one out, that type of thing. So, I like the fact that they mentioned a missed approach procedure. So I actually even looked that up. That it basically means that there's a standard procedure that if you know that you can't make a landing, you need to do something. And every plane has its own procedure of what they're supposed to do if they're not able to land on the particular site that they've reached and stuff like that. Like they're supposed to go to a certain altitude and then what type of instructions they have for holding and things like that. Part of the training for pilots, from what I've read, is that you have to keep practicing this thing known as missed approach. They want people to know how to deal with something in this type of emergency situation.
Yeah, not to minimize what the pilots do. I know the technology on the planes is really good, and they, I don't want to quote Patron from Airport too much, but
you can.
They can pretty much fly themselves, but the places where the pilots are most essential are takeoff and landing.
That's right. Well, I mean, you can talk about Patron, but I mean, that was 53 years ago that he was saying that, the planes can pretty much, fly by themselves. So think about how much the technology changed for the better over the last 53 years, you know, and you can multiply that by, you know, how much the pilot doesn't need to know what to do.
We at least hope it's that way.
Yeah, we definitely do. We'll have to get Patron in to check it out. You know, because there's no such things as problems anymore. They just call them Patrons, right? Like I said, it's nice that we get to see all the graphics that all of these controllers are dealing with. And John's looking around a little, scared. And behind him, you see like these monitors. It looks like they're coming up from the ground, but they're actually being pulled up from above. And I mean, that looks really cool the way that's done. And then we get Barnes, who says, "I've checked all systems. It ain't happening." Yeah. What's it look like? And he turns to one of the other guys and he goes, "Approach control. It's gone." Jesus, instrument 90 system is down. Confirmed. ILS is dead. Every goddamn system's dead. And in Mac, monitors are down. Attention all controllers, attention. We have a code red alert. So you see they've gone from yellow to red. So, I mean, this is a pretty pivotal minute, the way that they do this. But, and in the middle, you know, first of all, he says, "I've checked all systems, it ain't happening." Meaning what? What's not happening? He's not able to
Nothing's coming on. Again. Nothing, you know, it's not just flipping the switch. I can't fix it.
Okay, maybe we'll find out later this week and the beginning of next week that they haven't completely taken everything away from them. So it's strange that you know they can't do anything here. You know, that's the strange thing. And then we get a shot of the church right in the middle, and we see two men. You know, one of them's got a chainsaw and one of them's got an axe. And they basically are going in, splicing into some sort of cables underground. And a lot of sparks. A lot of things flying around and stuff like that. So I actually decided to look up chainsaws, okay, because it got me curious. So like, when do you think someone first created the idea of a chainsaw?
Oh, that, you know what? That's got to be in the 1800s, so sometime in the 19th century, because I'm sure that the logging community figured out right away that two guys yanking back and forth on a handsaw is going to take a long time to get down those trees.
Okay, well, you're correct and incorrect at the same time, because, I mean, using it in the timber industry started around 1830, but it was used for surgery before that. Okay, the idea of a chainsaw was originally developed for surgery. Okay, where they would use it to have to cut off limbs. You know, they had a fine serrated link chain held between two wooden handles, and that was pioneered the late 1700s by two Scottish doctors, James Aitken and James Jeffrey, and they would use it for cutting off diseased bones. And Aitken put out a medical journal in 1785, and it was they mostly used this new form of chainsaw for a pelviotomy. So I don't really know what that really means. It sounds a little strange that you just cut someone's pelvis off. Like, how can they survive? Do you have any idea about that, Richard?
None. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it sounds very strange.
Right. Probably. So apparently, it's referring to removing the leg at the pelvis.
Maybe. That would probably make more sense. Yeah. Apparently, the idea was thought of by Jeffrey that he wanted it to be, you know, like the chains of a watch. You know, that it would work that way. And they would use it to deal with diseased joints, sometimes the knees and the elbows. And, you know, using a chainsaw would allow a smaller wound and protect the adjacent muscles, nerves, and veins. Throughout most of the 19th century, it was used as a surgical instrument. And then in 1894, someone created what's known as the twisted wire saw, which was cheaper to manufacture. And it was gave a much quicker and narrower cut without having to deal with the fear of anything breaking or getting stuck in the bone. In the 1830s, they decided to start making something a little different, which had, you know, the links of a chain carrying small cutting teeth with the edges set at an angle, which is similar to the type of chainsaw that we're familiar with nowadays. And so it was originally used to cut bone. Someone saw that they could actually use this for something else. And they decided, as you mentioned, to start cutting down trees with it. And then they started creating portable chainsaws, because at first they were quite large, and you needed to have two people to work it in order to cut through a tree, because they were, you know, they were cutting down big redwoods and stuff like that with it. So the first portable chainsaw was developed in 1918 by a Canadian mill worker or mill owner named James Shand, and actually let his rights lapse, and therefore a lot of people used his idea and built on it. They developed an electric chainsaw in 1926 and a gasoline-powered chainsaw in 1929. I mean, these were mostly German companies. And during World War II, America had a lot of problems, obviously, getting stuff from Germany. So in America, they started producing their own. And it got to the point where they were making chainsaws that were so big and heavy that they had to have wheels in order to move them around. But because of World War II, there was a lot of improvements in aluminum, and they were able to lighten them, you know, reached a point where you could have one person, you know, carrying it at a time. And they ended up starting to use them for home and garden use and things like that. There are military engineer units that are trained to use the chainsaws. So are firefighters, in order to, you know, when they're dealing with fires in woods and stuff like that. So, Richard, how many chainsaws
do I have?
No. You're in Texas. You don't have chainsaws. You don't need chainsaws. There are other weapons.
There's plenty of stuff here to cut down.
I'm aware of that, but there are better weapons that people can use in Texas, right? How many annual chainsaw-related injuries are there in the U.S.?
Oh, I'm sure that there are a lot. My late wife had two very solid rules on home improvement. I was not allowed to operate anything related to the electrical system, and I was not allowed to use a chainsaw while standing on a ladder. So I'm sure that the world is full of people who have done something stupid with a chainsaw. There's, I would say, probably several thousand.
36,000 cases on average every year.
Yep.
And the medical cost is somewhere around the $350 million per year. Okay. Most of these are lacerations that are located on the left hand, for obvious reasons, because people are, you know, the most people who are righties will be holding part of the chainsaw with their right hand. And if something slips, it's going to hit their left. Right. Sometimes you will have right hand and finger amputations, but that usually happens to someone standing next to the person using the chainsaw. Sometimes you have burns, fractures, things like that. This article that I found mentions the fact that, you know, even if you think that your lacerations are fine, you probably should go to a medical facility, because there's a lot of dust and wood and chips and other debris that might get in there and could cause an infection if it's not, you know, cleaned properly and things like that. Most people, though, are injured or even killed by chainsaws due to kickback.
Yeah.
Have you ever used a chainsaw?
Oh yeah. You know, I used it regularly back in California. I had a bigger piece of property and a lot more trees that I had to cut back. Here I've used the chainsaw. Recently we had bad weather back in February. Lot of branches down. I mean a lot, and I had to get out the chainsaw and cut everything down up to size so that you could put it out for the trash collections, because they have a limited on how long something could be to pick it up.
Right, that's true. I'm glad you did it safely and that you still have all 10 fingers and toes.
I believe I do. Yes, they're all there.
Okay, good. I'm glad. So most chainsaw injuries rarely lead to death. But when it does happen, it usually happens because of someone who's, you know, improperly using the you know, the chainsaw, or not wearing proper safety garments. Sometimes people are killed because they don't move away from the falling tree that they're trying to cut down. You know, people get caught in between wood chips and electrocution from power lines. You know, those are most of the chainsaw related deaths. How many people of the 36,000, how many people are on average, do you think, are killed by chainsaws annually?
Yeah, that's probably in the low hundreds.
250 approximately.
Yeah, there you go.
And most of them are due to kickbacks. It's funny, it actually makes it sound like bribes, but no, that's not. Yeah, then we have the axe that they use to cut one of the things also. Obviously, axes have been around for a very long time. You know, you can go all the way back to the Stone Age and stuff like that. It's usually used to shapeshift and cut wood, or to harvest timber, or as a weapon. And sometimes it can be used in ceremonial, capacities also. There are a lot of different, versions of axes and things like that. But usually it consists of an axe head with a handle, which is also known as a haft or a helve. I mentioned this last season, or maybe it was even two seasons ago, that I actually went axe throwing last summer. And it was actually a lot of fun. You know, I had an hour at a range where you can throw axes. And, I was there with one of my sons and my nephew. And, you get to play all these different games like, tic-tac-toe and things like that. So,
yeah, I haven't done it. My daughter's done that, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting experience. Let's put it that way. I mean, it's not something I would do. They had like leagues. They had like signs up that they have leagues, that people can go there, like bowling leagues. You go every week, every Sunday night, come and throw axes. And, I don't know. That doesn't really appeal.
If you can have fishing competitions, I guess you can have axe throwing competitions.
Yeah, but I think the fishing competitions take a little longer.
Probably. I still don't understand. Slightly longer.
Don't know. Right. Pretty much, right at the end of this minute. So Trudeau then walks over, puts on the headphones, and then he starts talking, and he goes, "Attention all controllers, attention. We have a code red alert." And that gets cut off. He has nothing else to say this minute. He's going to have to, hold his breath till tomorrow and come back in 24 hours and continue saying what he wants to say. Even though
we have other things to talk about rather than what he finishes with, so we're good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, over the next 24 hours or just, over the next few minutes. Just find it funny that beforehand, when Barnes said it was a yellow alert, so he just picked up the microphone and did it. He didn't have to have the whole headset. Making announcements in the schools and stuff like that, they pick up the microphone and you push the button on the bottom and then you can talk into it to make announcements and stuff like that. Here you just use a headset, which also does not look very comfortable. I think in the 33 years since this movie came out, they've developed and invented headphones that are a little more comfortable, at least looking, than what he has here.
Yeah, I'm back to the frozen pizza. I'm at the peak of my technological advancement.
There you go. Okay. That is fair. That is fair. You have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
Nope.
Okay. So once again, the script doesn't have that much difference, but there's a few things. So when Barnes says, "I checked all systems, it ain't happening," it says, "And now God help us all react to another alarm." And then it says, back to the Virginia church, a cable yanked from the ground gets cut, sparkling all over the place. And then it says, glowing fiber optic cables stretched like a sacrifice on a block axe. Blade swoops down, sparks. The light dies. And then we have someone scream, "Jesus, instrument landing system is down." That's the only differences they have from the final cut of what they do here. So every Thursday, we have a segment called Aviation Thursday, where my guest will give their top five airplane or aircraft or airport or aviation movies. So, Richard, why don't you give us your top five? Start number five and work your way up.
Well, number five is Snakes on a Plane, which we devoted a movie of the month to 3 or 4 years ago.
I was on that.
It's a great show, and it's a fun movie. Lots of fun.
Yes, it was.
And it's, you know, I love a title that tells you exactly what it's all about. Number four
that's why Samuel L. Jackson was in it. He said, when I hear just the name of the movie, I just wanted to be in it.
Yep, there you are. Number four is basically similar to, you know, Die Hard on a Plane, only it's Die Hard on Air Force One. Air Force One. You know, Harrison Ford and Gary Oldman and a whole bunch of other well-known actors play out a terrorist scenario on the president's plane.
Mm-hmm.
Number three is based on a real-life incident with a real-life hero, Sully, which tells the story of the plane that made an emergency landing in New York on the river after running into a flock of birds during takeoff. And the pilot just did exactly what he's supposed to do, well-trained, but he was, you know, cool under pressure, and all of the people on the plane survived. It was, you know, a miracle on the Hudson, I think they called it.
Yeah, I actually rewatched that movie a few months ago. I liked it better the second time than I did the first time. Tom Hanks is okay there, but I just liked the way that they did the movie, you know, with flashbacks moving forward and backwards and stuff like that. You know, not the fact that it wasn't done chronologically helped, actually. You know, to make it
I think it makes a little bit more sense to tell the story that way when, you know, it's a short story if you just do it chronologically.
No, but the whole idea is the investigation.
Exactly. You know,
the main part of the movie is the investigation.
Right.
So.
Number two is a movie from this year, Plane, with Gerard Butler as a pilot of a plane that goes down in the South Pacific near a Philippine island that's controlled by the equivalent of a terrorist group. And I really liked this movie. I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was, you know, an action film that worked on all cylinders. If you haven't seen Plane this year, you should see it. But don't do it when you're getting on a plane, because it will not make you comfortable. Very unpleasant sequence when people are not in their seatbelts and you see what happens, and you'll always want to wear your seatbelt as a consequence.
Well, maybe then that is a good reason to watch it while you're in flight.
And then number one is Airplane from 1980, the comedy from the Zucker Abraham Zucker group, which is, you know, takes a movie called Zero Hour and puts it into a comedy format and has a lot of fun with it. And It's funny today, even though some of the things seem a little anachronistic. I'm sure that there are going to be people out there who are offended by something in the movie. But you know what? That's one of the reasons that the movie's funny, is because it's offensive to a lot of people. But yes. I can't understand why anybody wouldn't love to see Airplane and laugh a little bit.
I completely agree with you. I actually rewatched that also recently. You keep picking all these movies that I just rewatched.
So, there you go. So you don't have to go back and catch up on it. You've already done so.
That's right. I was laughing the entire time. You know, it's like Blazing Saddles. You know, I can't understand why people just, you know, yes, there are things that are somewhat offensive, but because it's there for comedy, it's to show that how stupid it is, you know, to act this way. You know, that's the thing. And people don't get that. You know, people don't realize that that's what they're trying to show with these things. So Airplane's.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to get into it too much because the world is full of people who would take umbrage at the fact that I'm even talking about it.
Correct. All right. Well, we'll leave it at that then. That's fine.
Yeah, I speak jive.
That's right. Well, you and Barbara Billingsley, so why not?
There you go. You know,
great. So, Richard, why don't you tell people once again how they can find Richard Kirkham?
I'm easily discoverable online at Kirkham A Movie A Day, which is my personal site. I have two places where you can find the content that I put up there. One is a Blogspot site. One is a WordPress site. The content is basically the same, there's just a little bit of difference in maneuverability on them. So Kirkham A Movie A Day, you Google that, you'll find one of the two sites, and there's plenty there for people to read about. I'm also on the Lambcast. I'm the host of the Lambcast, which is the weekly podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, and you can find us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
All right, and finding me once again is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So, Richard, you feel like coming back again tomorrow and finishing off the week with us?
What the hell? It's Christmas. Let's do it.
But not a word of this leaves this room.
All right.
All right. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay, everybody.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and